Good morning, everyone. It's approximately 9 a.m. on Thursday, February 27th. This is the date and time noticed up for the Utah State Tax Commission open meeting. I'm Commissioner Bruce Johnson. With me is Commissioner Darcy Dixon, Commissioner Michael Cragen, and Commissioner Robert Pirro. Also here is our Executive Director, Barry Conover, and our Administrative Assistant, Krista Johnson, is assisting us this morning. This is the time we have set up for public comment. Are there any members of the public that would like to address the commission at this time? Seeing none, we'll jump right into the approval of the minutes. Any discussion of that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Well, it's unanimous. You've already all voted. Consider approving the notice of scheduled meetings. We have a notice in our materials. We have meetings scheduled approximately every 2 weeks to, in the event that we need them, we do cancel them on a fairly regular basis when there's no need for them, but we do like to get those out in advance so people can at least have that on their schedules.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Dixon. I'm all with approval of the scheduled meetings, but I would like to make a comment about it if you could.
Please.
Okay. I would like to consider down the road moving these meetings from 9 in the morning to maybe 1:30 in the afternoon. Just something to think about. It has to be scheduled far in advance, at least 6 to 7, sometimes 8 months on our calendars, so it's not something that can happen immediately. One thought is it allows people who aren't in the tax commission building, it allows it to maybe combine it with a lunch hour, so they go to lunch, they come here, they see a half an hour meeting, they go back to work, they still have 3 hours of their work day at work or something like that. Rather than maybe going to the office and then coming here. So it's just something to think about, but I think we definitely need to move forward with these dates and times.
Okay, any other comment on that? So I believe you made a motion?
Yes, I did.
See no further discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
That passes unanimously also. At this point, Commissioner Cragen, Open and Public Meetings Act training.
Thank you. This is our first meeting of the year, so this is the meeting where we're going to have our annual training. I would draw your attention to the very small print right after the word act up there on the screens, indicating that I have updated the presentation for this year because the legislature made a couple of changes last year, and I'll point out what those changes are. So we start out talking about the Open and Public Meetings Act with the policy that the legislature has declared, and generally stating that the state, its agencies, and the political subdivisions exist to aid in the conduct of the people's business, and therefore it's the intent of the legislature that all those bodies conduct their deliberations openly. So that's the policy statement that we operate under. The law says that a meeting is open to the public unless closed. Only a legislator or a lawyer could say something more obvious. So the meeting is open. We have to look at the definition of meeting, and there are three things that we're going to look at: the convening of a public body with a quorum present. The convening of the meeting is to call together the public body by a person authorized to do so that they can discuss and act on subject over which the public body has jurisdiction. Definition of a public body is specified in statute, and there are five different factors that we look at. Each of them is highlighted there. To make it easier in application, I'm just going to show you how those five criteria apply to the tax commission. We're a state agency. We have administrative and executive authority. We're created by the Utah State Constitution. There are four members. We expend, disperse, and are supported by tax revenue. We're the revenue agency, so we definitely have a connection to the tax revenue. And we have authority that's spelled out in statute and by the Constitution. So therefore, we are a public body. Now, in addition to the four commissioners, the statute provides for an executive director for the revenue agency and specifies some specific authority for the executive director and authorizes the tax commission to delegate some authority to the executive director. So looking at the executive director, all of the same criteria apply except that the executive director is just one person. And because he is just one person, in the current instance, he is just one person, he is not a public body. So the actions taken by the executive director and the people who work for him are not subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act. We do have some other subsets of the tax commission or some other boards that work with the agency that are part of the agency, like the Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division Advisory Board. It is a public body. They invited me to come to their first meeting of the year last month and give this presentation to them so that they had their annual training as well. In addition, the Farmland Evaluation Advisory Committee is also a public body. It meets all of the criteria that are spelled out in the statute. So back to our definition. A meeting is the convening of a public body with a quorum present. So when the public body is called together by someone authorized to do so and they have a quorum present, they have to have they are subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act. The act says that a quorum is a simple majority of the members unless there's an applicable law that defines another body, another number. For the tax commission, three members of the commission constitute a quorum for the transaction of business. And you'll remember in 2013, for about 6 weeks, we only had three members of the tax commission. And so the argument could be made that a simple majority of three people is two, and therefore any time there were two commissioners meeting together, they had to follow the Open and Public Meetings Act. But the statute specifically says that you have to have three tax commissioners to conduct business, so we didn't fall into the Open and Public Meetings Act with just two commissioners meeting. For the MVED Advisory Board, their statute specifically says, excuse me, a majority of the members constitutes a board. Compare that, though, with the Farmland Committee. Their statute is silent, and so then the Open and Public Meetings Act default, a simple majority comes into play. So here are the instructions for how to host an open meeting. First, the body needs to adopt an annual notice for regular meeting schedule. We just did that. We have to adopt a resolution for electronic participation. We have that adopted in our rules. We have to give at least 24 hours notice of a meeting. We have to give the date, time, and place, and post an agenda online and send it to the newspapers. Our public information officer, Charlie Roberts, takes care of that for us. We have to identify topics for consideration with reasonable specificity. That's why on our agenda, the items that we will be voting on have the phrase action item in brackets after them so that it's specific which ones we'll be taking action on. And then Krista also makes sure that we get our notice posted on the public notice website prior to the meeting. We have to record it and we have to post the recording on the public notice website within 3 days of the meeting. Krista does that for us. This is one of the changes that the legislature made last year, that the recording has to be made available within 3 days of the meeting and it has to be there. We also have to prepare pending minutes and they have to be made available within 30 days of the meeting, but they do have to include a notice that says that they're subject to approval and may change between the time that the pending minutes are published and the public body takes action. Again, this is one of the changes from last year that the legislature approved. Once the minutes are approved, they still become the official record of the meeting, even though there's a recording that's available publicly. And the legislature last year told us that we had to have our minutes up within 3 days of approval on that public notice website. So those are all the changes that have come about since last year. Now, a public body may have a closed meeting to discuss certain issues. I highlighted the may here because it's discretionary. There's nothing in the law that requires a public body to go into a closed meeting, but they can if they feel like they need to. And these are the reasons that they can. For the tax commission, generally it's going to be to discuss the character, competence, or health of an individual, pending or reasonably limited imminent litigation. Those would be the most common. We could also meet in closed session to discuss the deployment of security personnel, devices, or systems, or investigations of alleged criminal misconduct. If a public body wants to have a closed meeting, they have to start in an open meeting, and in the open meeting, they have to enter the reasons for and the locations of the meeting, and then the people who vote to have the closed meeting. They have to announce in the meeting why they're doing it and where they're going. They cannot take any action. They can't vote on anything in the closed meeting. And taking minutes of meetings, of closed meetings, is optional. It's our practice to take minutes, and in the minutes that we approved at the beginning of the meeting, we did approve a set of closed meeting minutes. We are required to record the meeting, except when we're discussing character, competence, or health of an individual, or the deployment of security personnel or systems or devices. In that case, the chair will sign a sworn statement saying that that's the only thing that the body discussed. If there's going to be any action taken, then that must be taken in an open meeting. There are three things that are by statute defined as not a meeting: a chance gathering of the public body. So if all four tax commissioners or three of the four tax commissioners happen to show up at the same shopping mall on a Saturday, that's not a meeting. However, they can't say, as long as we're here, let's talk about this policy issue. Or if all three tax commissioners show up at, or three of the four tax commissioners show up at a social function of some sort, that is not a meeting, but they also can't say, as long as we're here, let's discuss this policy and make a decision. And then by statute, when the tax commission meets to consider confidential matters, that is not a meeting covered by the Open and Public Meeting Act. Those confidential matters include when we are reviewing offers and compromise, private letter rulings, our appeals hearings and deliberations, and any disclosures prohibited by federal or state law, our voluntary disclosure agreements and waiver requests that come from taxpayers. This exception applies only to the tax commission. We are required to keep confidential recordings and minutes, which we do, except in the case of initial hearings and deliberations. Here's some miscellaneous things. There was a movement a while ago to try and stop members of public bodies from using their cell phones and other devices to communicate electronically during a public meeting. That bill was amended to say that electronic transmissions are not prohibited. So I guess the sponsor got to pass a bill, but it really didn't do anything. A public body can remove a disruptive person. The public can sue to stop a public body from taking final action if they didn't do it right, or they can sue to compel a public body to comply with the Open and Public Meetings Act. Anytime one of those suits is filed, a public body is well advised to post a notice and an agenda, have a meeting, and vote the right way. And then the suit becomes moot and you don't have to go through the process. If there's ever any doubt that a closed meeting has been handled properly under the Open and Public Meetings Act, a judge can review the recording in camera, which means that the judge does it personally and then determines whether or not a violation has occurred. And members of a public body and those who work for members of a public body can be subject to criminal penalties if they violate any of the requirements. The last thing is that we are required to have annual training. Congratulations, you survived for 2014. Happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Any questions for Commissioner Craig? Do any of our folks in the audience have questions? I appreciate that training. I do think it's important. With regard to the electronic communications, even though they're not prohibited, I hope we would not circumvent that by sending text messages back to one another, because the purpose of the open meeting is so people can hear the discussions that we have. So I think that would defeat the purpose. We've never done that. I don't suspect we ever will. But thank you very much for that. With that, we'll move on to the next item in the agenda. Most of these items are probably mine, but I would invite our legislative director, Lynn Solarzik, to come up in case there are questions. I'll just start with them. The first one that we have here, let me just point out by way of introduction, the Tax Commission normally doesn't take any position on bills, on most bills. We may think they're good ideas, we may think they're bad ideas, but we think it's up to the legislature to answer those policy questions. So when we think they're bad ideas, we will raise those concerns with the legislators, the sponsor. And when we think they're good ideas, we will encourage the sponsor. We will work with the sponsors, and Lynn does an excellent job of this, of working with the sponsors and the staff on all the bills to make sure that they are workable and that they are accomplishing or would accomplish what the sponsor intends to accomplish without creating undue problems. So we do have a good working relationship with the legislative staff, and I think we have a good relationship with the legislature. But on occasion, there are bills that we think, although it's certainly a legislative call, we think it's related enough to the Tax Commission's mission that it's appropriate for us to take a position one way or another. And we've identified three of these bills that I would like to address. The first one is Senate Bill 47, third substitute. It's the Emergency Management Act amendments. I think the best way I can introduce that is you will maybe remember that I believe it was during Hurricane Sandy. The New Jersey Department of Revenue issued a notice at some point day or so after that event, that people coming into the state to help rebuild the infrastructure were subject to tax withholding requirements, income tax requirements, licensing requirements, and they had all of the requirements that anybody else doing business in the state would have. My first reaction to that was, that's not very friendly. My second reaction to it was, if we had an earthquake, for example, in Utah, and AT&T needed to bring in crews from out of state, or Questar needed to bring in crews from out of state, I don't have the power to say, you don't have to comply with these laws. What New Jersey did could just be viewed as, fulfilling their statutory obligation to put these people on notice that they have those obligations. Many of the communications companies particularly, but other utilities, have put together this bill, which they are taking to legislatures around the country. And what it provides is that if there is a government-declared disaster, the disaster has to be declared by the governor, or there's some other agency, emergency management committee or something like that. But anyway, it has to be officially declared by the state as a disaster. And then certain people who are called into the state to do certain kinds of things, infrastructure repair mostly, will be exempt from these requirements to register and to withhold on their employees and do things like that. They'll just continue to withhold on their employees in the state in which they are based. This will not address the situation where you have contractors flooding in to deal with private individuals, because frankly, private individuals probably need some more protection from some of those contractors who may come in and really need to be bonded and licensed and things like that. So this affects sophisticated utilities, public entities, but I believe it's a really good idea. So I would encourage my fellow commissioners to take a position in support of this bill.
Mr. Chairman, do you want each individual item, or do you want them as one? Do you want to go through all three of these bills at the same time, or do you want to handle one?
We can probably go through all three of them, then if anybody wants to separate the question, we can. The other thing I'd just like to say is that I really appreciate the proponents of this bill taking this to the states and doing it on a state-by-state basis. We were able to address many things that were unique to Utah's situation. And the current operating procedure for a lot of companies is immediately to go to Congress and get a nationwide one-size-fits-all preemption bill that's imposed on the states. And so one of the things I really appreciate about this is that the utilities have brought this to the states individually to deal with. The second one is a tax fee or charge offense and penalties amendment. That's Senate Bill 206. That was a bill that we didn't specifically ask for, but the Attorney General's office, and specifically Mark Baer in the Attorney General's office, who prosecutes tax crimes, had received some indications from the courts in the past that some additional specificity would be nice in defining what separates certain degrees of criminal offenses in the tax area. So this is by way of being kind of a technical bill, but because it is being brought by the Attorney General, the Assistant Attorney General who represents us, he's the one that's asking for it, I thought it was appropriate that we support it rather than just remaining neutral. The third one is Multi-State Tax Compact Amendment, Senate Bill 214. As you all remember, there is litigation in California that has raised questions about the impact and the validity of certain changes that have been made over the years to the Division of Income Tax scheme that we have in Utah and other states, and how changes in those states interact and interrelate to Articles 3 and 4 of the Multi-State Tax Compact. So last year, to avoid any or certainly to minimize any potential harm to the Treasury if that Gillette litigation were to proceed and be successful in Utah, the legislature, after consultation with us, withdrew from the Multi-State Tax Compact. So that three-factor formula election was no longer available. Then, largely at our request, they reenacted most of significant portions of the compact without the offending articles in them. And we've been informed by the executive committee of the Multi-State Tax Commission and their general counsel that they believe that the compact as now enacted in Utah is still substantially in compliance with the compact, and accordingly we can be full members and are full members. That legislation, however, had a sunset date that said it would terminate on June 30th of this year. And so we've simply gone to the legislature, reminded of that, and said we need to sunset those sunsets, repeal those sunset dates, so we will remain a member in good standing of the Multi-State Tax Compact. So I would encourage us to support that bill as well. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Dix, I'd just like to know where these are in the process. I mean, the legislature's been working for 4 weeks, so I'd like to know where we are in the timing of these. Often by the time we've supported them, it's already passed one house, or usually have already gone to committee meetings. So
I'm going to ask Lynn Solarzik to respond to that.
Yes, Senate Bill 47 sub 3 has passed.
Let's put the names to them. Then Senate Bill 47,
yes.
Substitute 3,
yes.
Emergency Management Act Amendment.
Yes, as of this point, it has passed its Senate committee hearing, so it's very early in the process still. Senate Bill 206, which is the taxpayer charge offense and penalty amendments, is actually on the consent calendar in the Senate. And that will either come off today or tomorrow. I'm not exactly sure which day.
I think that one just came out of committee 2 days ago.
It came out of committee Monday, right? Because you mentioned it. So it has to sit on the consent calendar 3 days. So. And then Senate Bill 214, the Multi-State Tax Compact Amendments, is also on the Senate consent calendar, went on the same day as Senate Bill 206.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, did you have an opportunity to speak to these bills in committee?
I spoke to them all. I didn't speak to the tax fee or penalty amendments. I spoke on both the Emergency Management Act amendments and the Multi-State Tax Compact amendments. I indicated in both cases my personal support for those bills, but I also indicated that the Tax Commission had not yet taken a position on them. As I think back, I'm not sure I explicitly made that statement on the Multi-State Tax Commission bill, because I was quite confident from the position we took last year where we were on that one. And my comment there was to just read into the record something from a Supreme Court decision in U.S. Steel versus Exxon that makes it clear that the compact does not in any way impact or affect Utah's sovereignty, and that the state has no obligation to adopt any recommendation of the Multi-State Tax Commission. That's up to the legislature. And I thought that was important to get on the record, so I did testify to that extent.
And Mr. Chairman, just so it's clear, you have additional knowledge about the Multi-State Tax Compact because you have a role with the MTC, is that correct?
Yes, as a former chair of the MTC, I'm an ex officio member of the executive committee.
So the legislature looks to you for some understanding of how the MTC works. I mean, it's a natural fit for you to go up and speak to the legislature.
You know, when there's a microphone and an audience, it's always a natural fit for me.
All right.
So with that, I guess as chair I can still move things, can't I? I would move that we express our support for these three bills. Any discussion? That's correct. We testify on many bills that we don't take a position on, and we get asked questions on many bills that we don't take a position on. So, all right, I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to take an opportunity just to make sure that, as you indicated, we reduce speak or address bills without taking a position on them. One of the ones that I did just that on was this Senate Bill 93, Internal Audit Amendments. There has been a first substitute, Senate Bill 93, adopted. And when that was adopted, the sponsor did accept an amendment on behalf of the commission that clarified how our internal audit unit will continue to operate in the task commission. And it was very helpful. That bill is sponsored by Senator Howard Stevenson. I just wanted to let everyone know that we appreciated him working with us on that. And as the bill stands, we don't have any concerns with that bill, but if there's any amendments, I'll be needing to go up and maybe speak on those.
Thank you. And again, we do appreciate the legislators generally and Senator Stevenson on that one, particularly being willing to address the concerns of the tax commission as these bills work their way through the process. Internal audit report, item number 7. Commissioner Dixon.
Yes, thank you. We have here today our Director of Internal Audits, Vincente Amon Padilla, and he's coming up to the front. Just note that it does say on the agenda, Internal Audit Report Action Item. This is a report. In a way, it's also, it's definitely a report to the commission. It's also an audit plan. The cover letter kind of gives you a report of what happened in the year 2013, just a quick summary on that. And I just want to draw your attention to the very last sentence in the first paragraph of that letter. It indicates that the year 2013 ended with the resignation of the information systems auditor. That auditor was with us about a year, and the hiring process for replacement is underway. It's just the nature sometimes of the economy and how things happen nowadays when people have opportunities to move on. We support that and we start again. So that's just to make clear. The reason that's important is that my fellow Commissioner Cragen did ask me as it relates to the internal audit plan that currently we have one full-time employee, which is our internal audit director. With the hiring underway, the plan anticipates that a new employee will be hired sometime in this year, so that makes the internal audit plan for 1.5 employees, because it's one employee for half of the year. So that's what the 1.5 means in the audit plan. So I appreciate you bringing that up so that can be clarified. So then the audit plan is laid out exactly that. The way you do these audit plans is you kind of take how many hours you've got in a year, you look at how much time you've got to allocate to that between administrative functions and training and development. You look at what are some of the audits that couldn't be completed in prior years, maybe because some audits took longer than others, or another issue came to the table and the plan had to be adjusted. You take suggestions from commissioners, from our executive director. The executive director takes consideration from the division heads, and you start laying out a plan, which is what you're seeing on page 4, 5, and 6. here based upon how many audit hours you have to devote to that. So that's been all laid out for you in this plan put together by Mr. Padilla, and he's now at the microphone, and you're welcome to ask him any questions. I do want to turn some time over to Mr. Padilla to add anything else to what I've said. One of the items about this is that we meet in an open meeting, as we've been through an open and public meeting at training. We try to make sure that these items are made public, that this is something that we're doing. The actual reports themselves, the final internal audit reports themselves, are not public information, but the process we go through is public information. So, Mr. Padilla, is there anything else that you want to highlight about the 2013 summary or anything in this plan that you would like the commission to look through?
Thank you very much, Commissioner Dixon. Aman Kadir, Director of Internal Audit. In 2013, unfortunately, I had to go through a major surgery, and that also took a lot of time from the audit hours available. That was not uncalled for, and it just happened. Anyway, for 2014, I don't see any of those kind of emergencies. And hopefully, I got a few leads about hiring an experienced internal auditor who would have experience in information system audits, and I wouldn't have to, you know, train him a lot. Unfortunately, I did, you know, got quite a few applicants, but most of the applicants didn't have that kind of experience that I was looking for. In the past 28 years or so, the internal audit unit I've been associated with, we have kind of really finessed this position, which is very much customized to the tax commission systems, tax commission's needs, tax commission requirements. And things have changed. For example, a few years ago, nobody heard of about continuous auditing. And now that has become a norm of almost all big companies, whether it's private or in government. With the availability of technology and software, we can review 100% of transactions in a relatively short period of time and could give a very better opinion about what the system looks like, what are the weaknesses, or what needs to be done. So, and we developed that technology, that experience in our internal audit unit, and I want to use that extensively, hopefully in the coming this 2014 year. Are there any questions?
Any questions for Aman? Okay, thank you, Aman. I would like to say that there has been a lot of scrutiny statewide on internal audit programs for various agencies. That's one of the reasons that Senator Stevenson's bill has been brought forward. I think it's fair to say that in all of those reviews, the Tax Commission has been singled out as I think the best agency in the state in terms of following the statutory responsibilities we have for conducting internal audits. And that's a tribute to certainly to Aman and to Doral, who preceded him and worked with Aman for 67 or 70 years or so. Before. and it's a tribute to Commissioner Dixon as well. It's also, I think, noteworthy that, and we'll get into this maybe a little bit more when we get into the executive director's report, and Commissioner Cragen also adverted to it, we can delegate a lot of things to Barry and to the operating divisions, and we do. Internal audit by statute, we cannot delegate. That is something, along with the appeals process, those are the two things that the legislature said you have to retain control over. And I think that's a that's a view of the indicative of the importance the legislature attaches to the internal audit function, and they clearly want us to attach importance to it. So we appreciate all you do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Discussion to that motion? None, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously.
Thank you very much.
All right, Executive Director's Report. Mr. Conover.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's always good to be here with you and your fellow commissioners. I first of all would like to echo what you said about Mr. Cadilla. Appreciate his good work, his willingness to come to the administrative side of the agency to get audit programs and audit items, and I appreciate his willingness to take those recommendations and to act on those that he felt that he feels applicable to do that particular year. We hope that he gets a new assistant, a new auditor soon, because we're going to wear him out if not. And also from the administrative side, we appreciate the audits because they give us insight and instruction as to what we should be doing, how we're doing, if we're doing it well, if we're doing it exceptionally well, or if we're just off at click. And those audits are very meaningful to us to manage. Also, would like to thank all of the participants in the audience today. These are our agency heads, management team from all six divisions. Well, excluding one. Commissioner Craig engaged some outstanding training on open meetings to our Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division here a week ago, or 2 weeks ago.
It was last month.
Yeah. Time flies when you're having so much fun. And they didn't think that they needed a refresher course that soon. So they opted to do the work that they were assigned to do. But I want to thank the division management teams here for being here and taking this fine instruction that Commissioner Craig put together. And Commissioner, it wasn't painful.
I did my best.
This was my second go around in the last month, 2 months. So it was exciting then, and that was exciting now. I want to just kind of give you folks a commission.
Pushing it a little bit better.
When you need a friend.
It was not painful, but it wasn't exciting.
I'm okay with not dreadful.
You guys are fun to work with. Work for. I got the with part. I just want to give you an update on a couple of things. The first item that we put out here is the change of instructions on our income tax return for this year to recognize that those couples that had their marriage solemnized on or before December 31st were eligible to file a joint return, those of the same sex couples. And that was a decision that I rendered in regards to the federal courts, where the court had struck down the Utah statutes, and then the Supreme Court put a stay. It was a natural, direct instruction change to say that because of that situation that those that were solemnized on or before December 31st were eligible to file a return, a joint filed return. No fanfare to that, just the fact that that was just a tax practice that needed to be followed. In doing so, we issued a kind of a press release or a release of information on January 15th, explaining that particular change in instructions, and we linked that to our website, and then from that from our front page website, it's in a very prominent location, we link it over to the comments into the income tax filing of returns and limitations. So I think we notified the public in a timely manner, in a responsible manner, And I think we got it in enough time that most people, if not all people, were able to file a return that would meet their characteristics as a tax filer in the state of Utah. Any questions on that, commissioners?
Well, I have some comments I'd like to add, but why don't you go ahead and finish your report,
okay,
and then I'll.
I want to thank the folks here, our processing division, our web developers, all those folks that could quickly move and make these instructional changes so quickly, and our PIO, Charlie Roberts, to get the word out to the press and make sure that everybody has the opportunity to file the filing period 2013 properly. The other item I'd like to share with you, as you all know, that we are remodeling and updating the hearing room 1025. And we have proceeded to put that together. It'll be probably over the next month that we'll be getting new equipment in there, new audio, visual, computer systems. We'll have screens that are those that are coming in to appeal that you are to hear will be much more capable of putting their presentations before you, and that you will have a much better technology and reference processes that you will be able to deliberate those types of hearings. In addition to that, we'll be also updating some of our other smaller hearing rooms in your behalf and for our behalf as the administrative side, because we use those rooms as well. And hopefully that this will be kind of a standard for us in the future, making sure that we have the proper technology and the proper information being granted to both the public as well as you folks as commissioners to do your responsibilities. With that being said, that's all I have to report on at this point in time. Chair?
Okay. Any questions for Barry? I'd like to make some comments back on the same-sex marriage issue, because I think it dovetails with the Open and Public Meetings Act, and I think it might be helpful for you folks to hear this, and I think it's also appropriate to put on the public record. I got a call from the Tribune, not on this particular notice, but on the previous notice that was issued when we were applying the Amendment 3. And Dan Harry from the Tribune asked me about that, and I'd talked to him previously and said, well, we were waiting for an opinion from the Attorney General. And so, we received that, and then we issued that notice. And Dan called me about that, and he said, well, who made that decision? Which was an obvious question, but nevertheless one that took me by surprise. And so my reaction was, and I think my exact words were, well, I guess I did. But I said that in part because I really don't like public officials, or private officials for that matter, who try to pass the buck on difficult decisions. And I certainly didn't want to say, blame Barry. But in point of fact, as Commissioner Cragen has pointed out, the tax commissioners can't do anything unless there's a quorum. It's like one hand clapping. It doesn't really do much good when you just have one commissioner. So the process that ensued in that decision and the subsequent one is that Barry and I work closely together. And he consults with me, and I give him my advice, and it would, I guess the most accurate characterization might be that I made a recommendation, but that's too formal, really. We just talked it through, and Barry made that decision, and when it became apparent to us that we needed to amend that in light of the judicial developments, we again, ask ourselves, well, did we do that right the first time? Should we have done that in a public meeting? Should that have been an act by the commission? And we determined at that point that no, we probably handled it correctly, that it was Barry's decision to make pursuant to the management agreement. But we wanted to put it on this agenda too, because the Tribune and others, well, probably not others, but the Tribune has raised the issue of why isn't, and this is an important thing, why aren't you doing it in a public meeting? And so we did want to at least acknowledge this decision in a public meeting, put on the record the reasons why the decision was made, and give anybody who wanted to comment on it the chance to comment. You know, in connection with that that original decision, I will say that we've also been responding to a Freedom of Information Act request, and you know, that's been before the Administrative Records Committee. I think, is that the right name for that committee?
Close enough.
And that's been an interesting process. And frankly, it's one of the good things about being a public agency is the legislature makes us come up and account, and the press keeps an eye on us and makes us account for what we do. You know, we're better and do a better job because of that. So I just wanted to make those points. I apologize, Barry, for saying it was my decision in the first place and taking all the credit for that that decision. It's just runs against the grain for me to try to blame things on other people, but in fact, it was a decision that we consulted on and determined it was the right decision, and that public there wasn't any action required of the commission. One of the reasons, as you all know, is that there are many things that the divisions do in the course of administering the tax laws where it affects the rights of taxpayers. And those taxpayers have the right to appeal to the commissioners in a hearing, which is, again, one of the two things that we can't delegate. And if we have collectively made the decisions first, then it becomes a bit of a kangaroo court. We are reviewing our own decisions. And taxpayers, I've practiced around the country, and that's one of the things that taxpayers really don't like. If you get an audit and you get to appeal it, but you get to appeal it to the same person who approved the audit. And we're very careful, as I think you all know, in avoiding ex parte communications with our auditing division, our taxpayer services division. So when people bring cases before us, it gets a fair and impartial hearing, and it's not something that we've already committed to. So that's a very important part of the considerations that went into the way that that Barry and I determined to handle this. Are any questions or concerns from any of the commissioners?
I just mentioned that you hearken back to your federal days. Freedom of Information Act is the federal law. The information request came under the Government Records Access Management
Grandma.
Act.
That's I stand correct.
Yep, Grandma.
I would venture to say it's even more important for the Federal Freedom of Information Act than, yeah, than the Grandma, but because they do a lot more stuff than we do. But I wanted to be on the record on that, we do have a member of the Tribune staff present, and I do think it's important that we do believe in the Open and Public Meetings Act, and we appreciate their inquiry on that, you know, keeping us honest on that. And they may or may not disagree with the way we handled it, and they're certainly, you know, we think we did it right, but we're always willing to get input and appreciate input from people who view that differently. So with that, I guess that's also item 9, that's also bled into a commissioner's report.
Kind of did.
So Do any other commissioners have anything they'd like to report?
Not necessarily to report, but I did want to follow up on an item brought up by our executive director. He talked about the upgrading of the hearing rooms, and just want to continue to emphasize that what started this is that the recording system has to work, because it cannot compromise the recording of a formal hearing that might be appealed to court. And our executive director, he understood that, and I appreciate him making this and taking this on and seeing it through. And I want to especially thank him and two others, Krista Johnson, our executive assistant, who's here, taking the minutes and making sure the recording for this meeting works, and Tiffany Harnes, who is, well, Krista's on the office of the commission side, Tiffany Harnes is on the executive director side. But Krista and Tiffany have worked very well together. They have been very good on the details. Krista excels in making sure that she has researched everything. Tiffany excels at kind of working with the vendors, and together they make a really great team. And I just appreciate Barry's oversight of the whole process and his confidence he's placed in those two to see it through as well. He has hands on when it's needed, and he steps back when it's not. So it's just really important that sometimes not everyone gets the recognition for what they've done to make it happen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else from the commissioners?
I do have an item I'd like for us to discuss, but it involves the character, competence, and health of an individual, so I'd like us to do it in a closed session. If we're finished with all the other business, I'd be happy to make a motion to do that.
And just clarify for me, although I know I just listened to the training, if we go into the closed session, but it does not require us to take any action, is it necessary for us to reconvene and announce that we didn't take any action, or can we go into closed session and effectively adjourn this meeting?
I think we can do the latter, and I was planning to make my motion reflect that. So I would move that the commission convene in closed session to discuss the character, competence, or health of an individual, that we go to our conference room on the fourth floor and meet there. I don't anticipate that we'll take any action, therefore we can just adjourn from there.
And I will sign the appropriate
affidavit
once that meeting is concluded. And I do want to thank Commissioner Cragen for all his work and knowledge on the Open and Public Meetings Act. He keeps me straight. I can't seem to remember from day to day what needs to be recorded, what needs to have minutes, what doesn't need to have anything. So I very much appreciate his diligence and his knowledge in that area. And with that, again, I'd like to thank you all for coming. I hope you feel like it was time well spent. And we appreciate all you do for the agency. Processing. You've got some important dates coming up. Don't know if you've thought of that yet, but Commissioner Pirro tells me you've already arranged a little cubicle or a stool or something where he's going to be able to sit and rip and sort tax returns here in a few weeks. So.
Yeah, but I'm bringing my own equipment.
I suspect it'll be a big Bowie knife of some kind.
You shouldn't have gave it away, Bruce.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, we do need to vote on that motion.
We do need to vote on the motion to go into closed session. All in favor say aye.
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 And does that also entail a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Yep.
So we are adjourned. Thank you.